Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Felicia Simone Barnes was born on January 12, 1994 in Georgia, to parents Janice and Russell. When she was young, her parents went their separate ways, and Russell did have three other children. Felicia was able to meet her older half-siblings at a family reunion when she was very young. Despite the instant connection she formed with her half-siblings, it would be a few years before Felicia would get the chance to reconnect with them. Felicia grew up in Monroe, North Carolina, where she lived with her mother. In 2010, she was a student at Union Academy in Monroe, and at just 16 years old, Felicia was already on track to graduate early. She had already gained acceptance to Towson University, just north of Baltimore, Maryland, where she would be studying early childhood education. Felicia adored children, and she had plans to become either a teacher or a counselor. It wasn't until Felicia was about 14 years old that she got the chance to connect with her siblings again. And during the summer of 2010, when she was 16 years old, Felicia traveled from her home in Monroe, North Carolina, to Baltimore, Maryland, to visit with her half-siblings. She had become particularly close to her 27-year-old sister, Dina Barnes, who worked as a pharmacy technician. Despite the 11-year age difference, the two shared a strong connection and were enjoying the opportunity to get to know one another. Just before this visit, Dina had recently separated from her boyfriend of 10 years, 26-year-old Michael Johnson. Though, she was still sharing an apartment with him. In fact, they had just moved into a new apartment together. The apartment was also shared by a teenager who's often referred to as Michael's brother, but there doesn't seem to be any distinct confirmation as to whether he is actually Michael's brother. For the sake of simplicity, I will just refer to him as Michael's brother throughout this episode. During this visit, Felicia and Dina got tattoos together. Dina got a honey drop tattoo, and Felicia got a rose, which would later become very important. At this time in her life, Felicia seemed to be blossoming into adulthood. She was reconnecting with family, and she was set to begin her college career early and start her own life. By all accounts, she was excited, ambitious, and truly enjoying her life. In December 2010, just after Christmas, Felicia was able to travel to Baltimore again to visit Dina. By this time, Dina had officially separated from Michael Johnson, and he was apparently no longer living in the apartment, although he did seem to still be spending quite a bit of time there. It's alleged that by this time, he had moved in with a new girlfriend. On the morning of December 28, 2010, Dina left for work just before 9 a.m., while Felicia was still asleep, allegedly sharing a bed with Michael's brother. The brother later said that Michael picked him up from the apartment that morning because he didn't actually have his parents' permission to be there. Michael then returned to the apartment to do laundry and pack up some more of his things to move out. Around 11 a.m., Felicia called Dina and told her that she was in the apartment with Michael. Shortly after this, at 11:30 a.m., Felicia posted twice to Facebook, one post about how she was in the apartment with her sister's ex, and one post about being hungry. It was also around this time that morning that Dina had asked Felicia to creep on Michael's Facebook and see if she could find any photos of him with his new girlfriend. Throughout the day, Dina texted Felicia from work, talking about different things like getting Felicia's hair done. The last message the sisters exchanged was around 12:30 p.m. Dina talked on the phone with Michael around this same time. At some point that day, Michael texted Dina that, quote, "it's not too late to work things out," end quote. But Dina says that she never responded to that message. He then told Dina that, quote, "little sis, Felicia, had woken up," and asked if his little brother could come back to the apartment. The brother claimed that when he returned to the apartment that afternoon between 1 and 2 p.m., there was no one there. Sometime that afternoon, Dina had tried calling Michael, but his phone was off and went straight to voicemail. He later texted her, saying that his phone had died and that Felicia was asleep again. Around 3:30 p.m., Michael called Dina and told her that he, quote, "didn't feel like going to work," end quote, even though his shift was supposed to have been 3 to 11 p.m. Shortly after, at about 5 p.m., Michael texted Dina that Felicia was up and active. Dina returned home from work around 6 p.m., and Felicia was gone. Knowing that she'd made tentative plans to go shopping with their other sister, Kelly, that day, Dina tried calling Kelly to find out if that's where Felicia had gone off to. But Kelly hadn't been able to reach Felicia to confirm whether she was picking her up. She hadn't seen her. No one had seen or heard from Felicia. Dina continued trying to call people who might have an idea of where her sister was, including Michael. And Michael did not answer Dina's call. He instead texted her, telling her that his phone was dying and that he was busy trying to move his things. Dina texted him back, asking when he last saw Felicia. Michael didn't reply until about an hour later, claiming that he last saw Felicia around 1:30 that afternoon. Strange, considering he had texted Dina at 5 p.m. that afternoon to tell her that Felicia had woken up. Felicia's jacket, phone, and purse were missing from the apartment, and it appeared that a pair of her slippers were missing as well. By 7 p.m. on December 28, 2010, Dina made the decision to call the police and report Felicia missing. Michael came over to the apartment in the early hours of December 29th, just hours after Felicia disappeared, and Dina described his demeanor as antsy and nervous. She also recalled that he was concerned about the implications of being the last person to see Felicia alive. In the following days, Felicia's family hung posters around the city and appeared on television news broadcasts multiple times to try to spread awareness about her disappearance. They even canvassed on their own, asking anyone and everyone if they had seen the 16-year-old girl. The police interviewed Michael for the first time on December 31, 2010, 3 days after Felicia disappeared. During this interview, Michael told police that Felicia especially liked staying with Dina because she allowed her to do things like drink alcohol and smoke weed. Weeks passed, and numerous searches yielded no results. The FBI had already become involved with investigating Felicia's disappearance. They used helicopters equipped with technology that would detect heat signatures emitted by bodies. But they found no trace of Felicia Barnes. In the weeks following Felicia's disappearance, her mother Janice heard from multiple sources that whenever Felicia visited Dina, Dina was allowing her to spend the night with boys, drink alcohol, and smoke weed. When Janice traveled to Baltimore to search for her daughter, she confronted Dina about this, and Dina allegedly admitted to allowing Felicia to smoke weed, but later denied ever admitting that to Janice directly. By February 2011, Dina was trying to obtain a restraining order against her ex-boyfriend, Michael Johnson. On April 20th, 2011, around 7:30 a.m., workers at the Conowingo Dam discovered a body floating in the Susquehanna River. Later that day, another body was discovered floating in the river about 3 miles away. Dental records and a rose tattoo quickly confirmed that the first body was that of 16-year-old Felicia Barnes. The second body was later determined not to be connected to Felicia's case. On April 25, 2011, 5 days after the discovery, Michael Johnson was arrested and charged with the murder of Felicia Barnes. 2 days later, at a hearing on April 27th, Assistant State's Attorney Lisa Goldberg testified that Johnson had asphyxiated Felicia at her sister's apartment, likely by smothering her with a pillow, and moved her body using a 35-gallon plastic tub. A witness told police that on the day Felicia disappeared, they saw Michael moving a large plastic tub out of the apartment, struggling to get it to his car. Michael claimed that he had used the container to move some of his belongings from the apartment. On May 4th, 2011, it was publicly announced that Felicia's death had been ruled a homicide, though the cause of death was not revealed to the public at this time. In May 2011, the FBI filed documents requesting access to Facebook and Yahoo accounts connected to Felicia. They also filed documents requesting access to four other Facebook and email accounts, allegedly in connection with an investigation in child sexual abuse material. The FBI later claimed that they had filed these requests in error. In June 2012, Michael Johnson pleaded not guilty to the first-degree murder of Felicia Barnes. His trial was originally scheduled for August 2012, but was later rescheduled to begin in January 2013. On January 21, 2013, the trial began. The medical examiner testified that Felicia's body was found naked and that she had no fingernails. It was not specified exactly what state of decomposition her body was in. The ME also testified that a trace amount of alcohol was found in Felicia's system, though they noted that it wasn't clear whether the alcohol was detected because Felicia had consumed it or whether it was from decomposition. During the trial, Dina admitted tearfully that she did in fact allow Felicia to consume alcohol and smoke weed. This trial included more than 17,000 pages of evidence against Michael Johnson. Perhaps the biggest piece of evidence was a sex tape, filmed on June 13, 2010, depicting Dina, Felicia, Michael, and his teenage brother engaging in sexual activity. The video was played for the jury, but turned around so the court couldn't see it. In the video, Dina and Michael are kissing and touching each other, and Felicia is engaging with the teenage brother. Allegedly, while Michael is kissing and touching Dina, he can be clearly seen looking at Felicia. This video had been stored on Dina's phone and was over 16 minutes long. It was learned that Felicia had engaged in other inappropriate acts in Michael's presence, such as removing all of their clothes and streaking around the neighborhood. It was also revealed that between June 2010 and December 2010, Felicia and Michael exchanged hundreds of text messages. The prosecution presented all of this as evidence that Michael had an inappropriate and predatory attraction to Felicia. Dina claimed that at some point after the tape was filmed, she witnessed Michael reaching to touch Felicia sexually. Dina confronted Michael about the incident, and he denied it. During the trial, it was learned that on December 28, 2010, the day that Felicia disappeared, Michael texted his brother saying, quote, "I wonder if I go there and start a new life there and become wanted here, would they be able to arrest me there?" End quote. His brother replied saying, quote, "You would have to see what countries extradite." End quote. A 2-minute phone call between Michael and his brother was also played in open court. Michael said, quote, "If they're taking my DNA, what are they testing against? DNA found on her where?" End quote. The brother then asked where. Johnson then said, quote, "Underneath her fingernails and all that, because me, her, and Dina were horseplaying and someone scratched the shit out of me," end quote. The brother then said, "Well, when was it?" And Johnson replied, quote, "It was before she disappeared," end quote. The prosecution then called a witness. James McCray testified that Michael Johnson had shown him Felicia's body wrapped in a bedsheet, and that Michael had asked for his help in disposing of her body. McCray claimed that he told Michael to leave Felicia's body in the water. The defense argued that James McCray was an unreliable witness, and claimed that he had previously testified for the prosecution in other high-profile cases. After 10 days of presenting evidence, the jury began their deliberations. After 2 days of deliberation, the jury acquitted him of the charge of first-degree murder, but found Michael Johnson guilty of the second-degree murder of Felicia Barnes. The sentencing was scheduled for March 20, 2013, but instead of handing down a sentence for the second-degree murder conviction, Judge Alfred Nance granted Michael Johnson a new trial. The defense had filed a motion requesting a new trial, citing issues with the prosecution withholding information and evidence. The judge deemed James McCray an uncredible witness and cited his testimony as the reason he was granting a new trial. On December 2, 2014, the second trial of Michael Johnson began. 2 weeks later, the defense filed a motion to declare a mistrial, and this motion was initially denied. A few days later, they filed another motion for a judgment of acquittal. The second trial did ultimately end in a mistrial, and the jury was discharged. A retrial was scheduled for March 2015, but on January 14, 2015, the defense filed a motion to dismiss indictments, citing double jeopardy. Ultimately, the defense's previous motion for a judgment of acquittal was granted, and all charges against Michael Johnson in the murder of Felicia Barnes were dropped. The prosecution refiled the charges against Michael Johnson, stating that the judge in the second trial did not have the authority to acquit Michael Johnson of all charges after a mistrial was declared. The charges were once again dismissed, but the prosecution then took their case to the Court of Special Appeals, the second highest court in the state of Maryland. The Court of Special Appeals sided with the prosecution and ordered a new trial for Michael Johnson. The defense appealed the order for a new trial to the Supreme Court, stating that the order violated Michael Johnson's constitutional rights. In October of 2017, 2.5 years after the second trial ended in a mistrial, the Supreme Court denied the defense's motion to block the order for a new trial. In March 2018, more than 7 years after Felicia's disappearance and death, the third trial of Michael Johnson began. Michael Johnson waived his right to a jury trial for this third time around, and instead opted for a bench trial. This trial was handled by a new team of prosecutors. In the end, the judge acquitted Michael Johnson of all charges in the murder of Felicia Barnes. In 2012, almost 2 years after Felicia disappeared, her family proposed a bill in Maryland called Felicia's Law that would require the state to publish a list of missing children, along with a list of volunteers and organizations who were able to help in the searches of missing children. In May 2012, the bill was signed into law by Governor Martin O'Malley and was the first of such laws to be named after a non-white child. Soon after her disappearance, her family also founded the Felicia Simone Barnes Foundation in her honor. In the end, Felicia Barnes did not get her justice. Her unresolved murder has not made headlines years later. It's important that we keep talking, keep saying her name, keep sharing her story. Her family has done so much over the years to keep Felicia's memory alive and to keep people talking about her, and they shouldn't have to do that alone. All sources for this episode are listed in the show notes. Please be sure to leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you'd like to request a case for me to cover, there's a link in the show notes for the case request form. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at CrimeAgainPod, on Instagram at CrimeAgainPodcast, and on TikTok at CrimeAgainPodcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.